The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
You want some bad news, Michael?
No.
What are you asking me?
You're the guru of the gray matter. I figured if anybody had it, you'd have the answer.
I can't give you any direction.
I think I'm going to have to change this channel. I'm sorry.
You're completely wrong.
I refuse to be wrong on two calls in a row.
Tell me I'm spot on or tell me I'm crazy as I'll get out.
I have no idea.
I have a six-month-old, so we'll be raising him according to Dr. Ray.
Talk about being a winner.
So, you want my question?
You ain't making any sense.
You're absolutely right. I just needed confirmation.
So what are you going to do about it, Dawn?
I'm calling you.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Now, that is a self-confident woman. She hears you ain't making any sense, and she says, you're absolutely right. I just wanted to hear it from you. One time in my marriage. Of course, I've never been foolish enough to say to my wife, you ain't making any sense. That would be a bad move. That's almost as bad a move as if your spouse says, does this outfit make me look big? You can't answer that question. If you hesitate for one nanosecond, no matter what you say after that, it's over. What you do, and this is Grindy's advice for marital couples, you answer the question before it's done. Does this outfit? No. There you go. You're safe. Nice to have you with me here. I am in the Ave Maria studios because last night I had the good fortune driving through that wretched storm that hit here in the Plymouth Ann Arbor area. A vicious storm. I guess there's a lot of damage to people's places. And St. John's Resort. Now, that I'm hoping that cut our crowd in half. I don't want to think it was me who cut our crowd in half. But I was delighted to be there, and now I got the good privilege to just come in here to Ann Arbor, the studios, Ave Maria Radio, and do the program. Very nice setup here. Same number, though, 877-573-7825. 877-57-EQUAL. That's the number to call. If you'd like to get on to the program, I had to beg, grovel, scratch and claw my way up the media ladder to get a program. Seems a bit inequitable that you can just call and you're on the air. Now, granted, you're not on the air as long as I am, but still, you can be on the air if you have a question about something in your life. Maybe a frustrating situation. A difficult person. I like the word difficult. If somebody's bugging you, rather than saying they're a narcissist, they're toxic, use the word difficult. It's a broader term, and it's not as nasty. Just a difficult person. Keep in mind, there are probably those out there who think you are difficult too, as there are those out there who think I am difficult. I don't want it to be more than 50% of the people I know. You start getting above 50% of the people you know thinking you're difficult, that is a bad percentage. 877-57-EQUAL is the number. Any kind of question, really. I mean, most of them are particular and personal, but they can be generic. Had a question yesterday. A gentleman called in and asked, what can I expect in marriage counseling? What do you counselor types do? So I gave him kind of a very broad 101 explanation. Also, if you have a question about the faith, now I'm not going to give you an extensive apologetics or catechetical explanation, but I think I can give you a thought or two as I spent 8 years scratching and clawing my way back to the Catholic Church after I'd left for 8 years. Or if you have a comment, something to help somebody else live better. I get a lot of those in the email. People will say, you had a caller the other day. Here's an option. Here's something that I experienced and how it worked with me. So you can do that too. You can do that on the air. 877-57-EQUAL. You will get Eric Dumont, call screamer there on the other side of the plexiglass. This is for the guys out there. I want to give you a technique, a strategy, a practice that is really guaranteed to put some friction in your relationship. Why would you do that, Ray? Well, I just want to show you how it works. Let's say that you hear your wife locked into a verbal battle with a kid. Let's make the kid a 14-year-old girl. She wants some privilege that your wife doesn't want her to have. She wants to go somewhere with a kid named Snake to the mall in two counties away. And your wife rather judiciously thinks, no, this is not a good idea. You think, well, let's see what we can find to work this out. This isn't worth this kind of conflict between mom and daughter. You hear this. It's getting louder. It's gone on for 6, 8, 10 minutes. You rouse yourself from your post, wherever that might be, and you go in and you start out with a really dumb question. What is going on here? Oh. Now, first of all, it's clear what's going on here. You have heard it. Second of all, the implication is there's some kind of equal bickering going on. Mom, daughter, equal. Okay. So you start out with the daughter. Now, what is it that you want? And she presents her perspective. Well, you say I'm a good kid. You say being a good kid is going to get me privileges. And I'm just asking for one little privilege. And she, notice the impersonal pronoun, not mom, she doesn't want me to do it. She's like this all the time. So you hear your daughter's side first. Again, another bad move. You're giving the prosecutor the first dibs at the jury. See, you're playing court. I call it holding court. So you turn to your wife. So what is your objection about this? Now you see what's going on here? Right away, quick, the dynamic is I'm going to sort through this and I'm going to find out which one of you is being unreasonable. Now that may not be your intent, but I'll tell you what, that is the way it's going to be heard by 14-year-old ears. Dad is coming in here and he's checking out what this is all about. He wants to hear both sides. Oh yeah. And he's going to find out a compromise. He's going to smooth it all out. One of the problems here is that he is seeing mom and daughter as equals. Oh, he may not acknowledge that, and he may not believe that, but that's the message of his approach. I'm finding out the two perspectives. And then I'm going to see how we can meet in the middle, how we can come to a win-win scenario. Now, the only problem with a win-win scenario is the daughter's only going to think it's win-win if she wins. Now, how might you handle this not to make your wife feel beleaguered or, in essence, ganged up on? Because holding court is really a bad parenting move. Now you might be thinking to yourself, well, yeah, but my wife is getting, she's getting unreasonable at this. She's getting emotional. She's talking too much. She's arguing too much. No wonder the daughter's getting all frustrated because my wife is getting emotionally carried away. That may be, but that is irrelevant to her position as authority. Her style may be bad. She is mom. So, let's rewind and have you enter the scene. You walk in, you say to your wife, what is she doing here? Meaning the daughter. Well, she wants to go blah, 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 and I don't want her to go blah, blah, blah. Okay, then that's the way it is. Now, the daughter looks at you. Oh yeah, you always just agree with her because you have to. That's the way it is. You have to. Now, that's disrespectful, basically. So what are you going to do about that, Dad? Because she's already been disrespectful to Mom, and I think you need to do something about that. She's not just negotiating for her position, what she wants. She's getting surly about it. You do not disrespect mom. You do not disrespect mom. But what if she has a good point? What if mom is being unreasonable? Then talk about it later with mom in private, away from the ears of the daughter, because she's going to use this as ammunition. Even dad thinks you're unreasonable. Even dad can't bring himself to agree with you. Oh, oh, oh. Is this a sore spot in marriages? You betcha. I can't tell you. It's more the wives that feel they're not backed up than the husbands. I'm getting more and more women coming into marriage counseling saying, I wish you would back me up. But instead, dad holds himself up as the arbiter. He is the one who decides who is being correct in this situation. It's not a matter of correct. Mom has authority. Even if you think, well, she's being kind of overprotective. She's being kind of narrow about this. The daughter's a good kid. She can be trusted. Even if you think that, talk about it later. Don't go in there and try to sort through this mess when the daughter's sitting in the first row of the jury box listening. You may get your perspective and your wife may surrender to you. But I can almost guarantee you there's going to be some sense of betrayal on her part. You went in there and you tried to decide who had the better arguing position. Ooh! Not then. Not there. That doesn't work real well. Again. Even if you think your wife is not handling this well, she's mom. Back her up, sort it out later, let the daughter see that you and mom are one. I don't know if I can be one with something I think is unreasonable. You're sorting it out later. You're talking about it later. Where do you think that your wife would be more open to you offering any kind of feedback on her style in front of a 14-year-old or when it's just you and her? You offer that in front of a 14-year-old and you are risking, no matter how correct you are in your observation, you are risking your wife looking at you like, I can't believe you're doing this. What are you doing? In one of my books, I called it Holding Court. I think it was in a marriage book. I said, it is certainly a way to create marital friction. Even if your perspective, as judged by 72 of 100 objective observers, is the more reasonable one. Even if your wife got pulled into a bicker match with this kid, as judged by 64 of 100 objective observers. And even if you think you're smoothing things out by doing this, you are risking some major marital discord, at least for the moment. For many guys, it becomes a style. Remember, you're not keeping the peace. You're roiling the waters. 877-573-7825. Please call. I'm Dr. Ray.
Every year, couples who go on the Ave Maria Radio's Good News Cruise testify how their marriages are revitalized and transformed. Join us on the next Good News Cruise from January 5th to 11th on the Royal Caribbean's Oasis of the Seas. You'll be joined by Father Michael Schmitz, Teresa Tamio, Dr. Ray Guarendi, and many more speakers. Cabins are selling fast, so be sure to book your spot now. Faith and fun on the sea and in the sun. There's no topping that. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the travel tab to find out more.
Do you own popular index mutual funds or ETFs? If so, you're automatically owned shares of companies that conflict with your moral beliefs. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. The experienced professional portfolio managers make decisions based on investment fundamentals and pro-life values. You can learn more about Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
The wisdom of Mother Angelica.
I went to Las Vegas years and years ago for one of these cable shows. And I was shocked to see all these old ladies in their 70s and 80s getting off that plane, running for a slot machine. You don't have a chance to win. They're all fixed. I know, my uncle used to have slot machines.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Location, location, location. These are the three most important factors in real estate. The same might be said for colleges. Trudging through snow to get to an 8 a.m. statistics class is a much different experience than breezing by a palm tree to the raucous applause of a laughing gull. With the average temperature of 84 degrees and wetland nature as your backdrop, it's no wonder students tend to stay once they visit our campus. Ave Maria University, your future location, location, location. Visit avemaria.edu.
Very nice to be with you. I'm Dr. Ray Grindy. I very much appreciate your calls, and I even more appreciate your patience as you wait, as we will do everything we can to get to every call. But following the rules of this program, Pietro from Ohio called a week ago at the end of the program, and he got shortchanged. Now, I think that some callers think they get shortchanged just talking to me. However, our rule is if you are on the program at the end, you are first up when you call back, and Pietro called back. Hello, Pietro.
Hello.
Thank you for calling back.
Thank you for having me back.
Well, now that we've got all this gratitude out of the way, what can we talk about?
Let's talk about panic attacks and anxiety and how that relates to an itch.
Hmm.
That it's not going to hurt you, but you're just compelled to scratch it.
Oh, interesting perspective. So when you say compelled to scratch it, now an itch is a physiological thing that indeed you want relief from, right? So you're going to scratch it to get relief, right?
Right.
You have a panic attack and you feel compelled to get relief from the panic attack.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So how do you do that?
Well, according to you, the best way to do it is to realize that there's no danger and to just ignore it, basically.
Well, you're part right. It isn't just me who thinks this. This is pretty much cutting-edge anxiety stuff. You talk to people mm-hmm. who are very experienced in the field. They will say that what we understand about anxiety, and particularly panic attacks, is that they're generally inexplicable. They are unexpected. They just sort of happen out of nowhere. And someday I'm going to do a whole bunch of reasons why that is.
Mm-hmm.
And people fear the anxiety attack. What is wrong with me? Am I in danger? Am I losing my mind? Am I freaking out? What am I looking like? What will I do? Will I throw up? Will I faint? So that kind of forms a microphone feedback loop. My body reacts up for some unknown reason. I just surge. My fight or flight response just kicks in. Then I interpret my fight or flight response with my head, and I fuel it. Now, my body isn't just acting up. Now my brain is feeding it, and it's getting worse. So what I do is I leave the situation as though the situation caused it. Sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. I think, what was that all about? Because panic attacks, Pietro, always end. There's never been a panic attack in the history of panic attacks that doesn't end. They all end. Okay? Yeah. So, you know, somebody comes to my office and says, I had four panic attacks last week. I go, are you still having them? Well, no, they all ended. Ah! So they end. Yes. You don't have to do anything to make them end, do you? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Some itches are, you scratch them and it's over with, but then some just persist.
Well, they persist,
to the point
yes.
Where, you know, I've had that where you actually harm yourself. You could scratch yourself raw and maybe even bleed.
Beautiful insight. The parallel is wonderful. I should put it in a book.
Yeah.
You're right. What happens if the panic attack is comparable to an itch and you keep reacting to it in the same way, you're mm-hmm. absolutely correct. You can become a prisoner of anxiety. You can fear when it's going to happen again, where it's going to happen again. You could become agoraphobic, which is I can't leave my house because I don't want one of these things to hit me out in public. Very much so. The difference is this. If you recognize, if you truly believe that the panic is in fact anxiety and not danger, there's nobody attacking you, there's no dog running at you, there isn't somebody with a gun coming towards you to rob you, this is just for whatever the reason your body acting up. You recognize that. You take away the cognitive fear component. When that happens, the panic will subside. Now, it may take 5 minutes, may take 2 minutes, may take 10 minutes, but it will subside. And once you emerge from that, you realize that didn't hurt me other than that unpleasant experience. I don't like anxiety. It's unpleasant. Okay. But it isn't debilitating. It isn't something where you say, no matter what, I'm going to avoid that ever, ever happening again because it was so unpleasant and so unendurable that there's no way I will do anything. I will not go to parties. I will not go to church. I will not go anywhere where panic could erupt. Because the difference is this. You have to decide, do you want freedom of movement or don't you? And if you recognize...
I guess that's why I'm asking the question, yeah. Because some of these persistent itches, if you may be better off not scratching them at all because they still come back.
Well, here's the
and
difference.
Some itches I've had, I don't scratch, and it just goes away.
Here's the difference.
Okay.
You can scratch an itch, and it will go away, but it may come back. You can scratch it again. Or if you've got some kind of condition like poison ivy, it's just going to itch all the time. But a panic attack is different. A panic attack is as you deal with it, not scratching it. No, you're not doing that. You're floating with it. You're saying, this is anxiety.
Okay.
It is distressing. I don't like it. However, if I want to be free of it, I need to interpret it correctly. And to interpret it correctly is to say, this is my body acting up, fight or flight. There's chemical surge. That's all it is. That's all it is. And then it will fade. So you develop the mindset that says, I can handle this. I can float through this. And then what happens? Here's where it's different than an itch. Once you recognize that, after, say, 3 or 4 times of going through one of these panic attacks, and they get less and less and less intense and shorter, you realize you don't itch anymore. You've conquered mm-hmm. it.
Very good.
It's very true. I'm working on a book on anxiety right now. And by the way, panic attack, almost everybody's had a panic attack. I had a panic attack once. And it was interesting. I didn't know what it was. I was playing ball and in the outfield, and I'd been running for balls for about an hour. I took after a ball, and oh, man, all of a sudden, my heart starts racing like crazy. I'm getting lightheaded. I can't breathe well. Oh, shoot. All right. Pietro, I'm going to let you go, but I'll finish this story on the other side. Thank you, my friend. God bless you. This is Dr. Ray. Good calls up there. Please call 877-57-EQUAL. Thank you so much for joining me.
Living the Beatitudes with Father Bjorn.
Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted. This strange beatitude reminds us that Jesus is challenging us with his ways to heaven on a new exodus. We're leaving behind the Egypt of this world to find the eternal paradise of heaven. When we tend to think of happiness, we tend to think of it in a self-centered way, a possession of a temporary good or passing fancy. But Jesus is calling us into eternal happiness. And actually, morality is a search for happiness, says Dominican priest Servais Pinkers. We're looking to be happy, and a lot of times we end up at dead-end roads that don't lead us to where we want to go. How can we be blessed when we mourn? In sorrow and difficulty, hardship and cross, we are called closer to Jesus. It's God's fingerprint in our heart reminding us that we're made for eternal happiness. Blessed are those who mourn, for they shall be comforted.
For more about the Beatitudes, visit EWTNRC.com.
Why does marriage require complete fidelity between spouses? The Catholic Catechism states that the intimate union of marriage is a mutual self-giving of two persons ordered to the welfare of their children, which requires that there be an unbreakable union between them. The deepest reason is found in the fidelity of Christ to his church. Through the sacrament of matrimony, the spouses are able to represent that fidelity and witness to it. For these reasons, the spouses can be nothing but completely faithful to one another. Marriage is such a deep, personal union of giving oneself to the other that it cannot, the Catechism asserts, be an arrangement until further notice. As difficult as it may seem to retain this indissolubility for a lifetime, it is made possible by God's irrevocable love in which the couple shares and which will support them through their marital journey. This is Peggy Stanton, and this has been the Order of Malta's Minute with the Catechism.
(877-573-7825) number to get onto the program here on The Doctor Is In, as I am safely ensconced in the Ave Maria Radio Studios. Ave Maria cooperates with EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network, bringing this show to you, which could make you grateful to them or upset at them. Not sure which. All right. I promised Pietro I'd give a little, just a quick synopsis of my own personal panic attack. Playing softball, this is many years ago, probably 30, 35. Yeah, I played softball when I was kindergarten. That's right. Back then, I could tell my legs, run! And they'd go, how fast? How far? Now I say run, they go, says who? So, I took off after a ball. I've been chasing balls for about an hour. Oh, man, that last sprint did me in. Started breathing really hard. I mean, much harder than a post-sprint. Breath was shallow. Heart was racing. I was a little dizzy and lightheaded. So I thought, whoa, what is that? So I just kind of knelt down out there, figuring, oh, this is going to taper here. It didn't. So I went behind the backstop, and I just sat there. And I remember thinking, oh, huh. You know, my clients have told me about their panic attacks. I got my own now. This feels like a panic attack. And that's the way I viewed it. It was like I was detached. I was studying it, you know, like a shrink, analyzing it. Yeah, I know. And I didn't understand it, and it eventually slowed down to kind of a low level of anxiety. I didn't know why. I didn't know what happened. I wasn't unsure, but I just thought, well, you know, panic attacks happen. Who knows? I was at a restaurant right after that. Me and the boys, we went out, fast food place, standing in line, looking at the menu, and then I realized I had not eaten for over 24 hours. My schedule, I just went straight to ball practice, and that was it. My blood sugar level had gotten low. And low blood sugar can do that. It really can. And that's what it was. But when I had it, I didn't panic about being panicked. Because I knew enough about anxiety attacks that it didn't throw me. Yes, the arousal was there, but it was assessed in a different way. It was not assessed as, oh no, something's wrong. My body's going haywire. I got to get to the emergency room, which a lot of people do, by the way. They will tell me when it first happened, they went straight to the emergency room. Okay. So there it is. Little bit. We have an anonymous caller from an anonymous place. So maybe I think it's Tajikistan. She's calling about her 17-year-old son, who's pretty defiant. Hi, caller.
Hi, Dr. Ray.
Well, I got to think, now, did he get defiant just recently, or has he been pushing on you for a while?
Well, we think that he's been a little bit oppositionally defiant probably his whole life. You know, who isn't a little bit oppositionally defiant and stubborn?
I'm not, but and you can't tell me that. I'll totally resist it.
But we feel that as he, of course, is entering, you know, 17 years of life, he's, you know, feeling that he's in charge now. He wants more control, so to speak, and that if he doesn't want to do something, well, he won't do it. He doesn't feel he needs to. He's going to be, you know, autonomous. He's going to be not.
Well, how does he do that, Mom?
Him.
How does he basically say, I'm not doing that, and you say, well, you're not having the car? I mean, how does, I'm not doing that, well, you're not having a smartphone? I mean, how does he do that?
Yes, and I guess we do take that burden onto ourselves because in this day and age, that's how kids connect. They have their cell phone. And so I guess we feel that he would lose that connection to his friends.
Are his friends good influences?
Oh, yes. God bless us with these good friends. And that's been, you know, a lifesaver, and we don't want to take that away from him.
Right.
But it's just this defiance. And
you're talking a very, very broad thing. You got a 17-year-old who's deciding, I'm getting pretty much close to being independent, and therefore, I really don't want to follow your rules. Right? Is that kind of his attitude? I don't want to follow your rules.
Yes. Like a couple weeks ago, he thought 11:30 at night, he's going to go drive around.
Oh. How do you get the car?
Yeah, well, because he has keys, Dr. Ray.
Okay, how do you get the keys?
He has keys, and we say it's our car. You're not going out.
But are you backing it up? If you say it's our car, you're not going out, and he says, yes, I am, and he just leaves.
Yes.
So
yes. Well, my child is 6 foot, 350, Dr. Ray. I cannot do anything.
Yes, you can. You control everything.
I know.
I think what's going on here, now again, this would be a therapy case, okay, clearly. And I can't give you quick answers on a 4-minute radio call. However, one of the things you're going to have to answer as a mom, which is, do I just hold off until 7 months from now he's 18 years old and then he's gone?
Yes.
You can do that.
That's my husband's philosophy. That's what my husband feels.
Okay, well then that's your decision as a parent. You can do that.
Yeah.
Now, if you're a mom, and a lot of moms in these cases go, where's he going to go? What's he going to do? He's got no money. He can't have our car. So we're just throwing him out in the street. That's what a lot of parents will say. However, that's a decision you and your husband have to make. In the meantime, you have to decide. Do you have younger kids?
No.
Okay, well, that's a good thing, because these younger kids would be watching this, and they'd be thinking, oh, the rules change when you're a little older, huh? I deal with an awful lot of parents in your situation, Mom, in therapy, and they got a decision to make. Their decision is, okay, in the remaining months, or however long, it might not be months, it might be 6 years, that this person is going to live here. What am I going to do to show them they do have to cooperate with us? Where I'm going to wait till they go to sleep and I'm going to take the keys. Now, at that point, most parents won't do that, and I'll tell you why. Because I don't think I'm wrong, but your son would go crazy on you.
Oh, yeah, and he has in the past. And we've had to call the police because of rages. And
okay, then this is a serious situation. I wouldn't be fair to you if I said, okay, I'm going to give you two things to do that's going to bring your son under control, because I don't think he wants to be under control.
No.
So.
Well, if it's all going his way, Dr. Ray, it's great. We feel he's, you know, narcissistic tendencies, and, you know, when he wants something, oh, everything's, you know, smiles and butterflies and rainbows, and then, you know, it's very manipulative, and it's a very sad thing, because we can kind of like feel it coming in those moments.
Is he in school?
Yes, he'll be a junior.
Does the school complain about him?
No, and this is the thing. He is...
What's that tell you?
Pardon me?
What's that tell you? He's not oppositional.
Well, I think it tells me I need to keep praying to St. Augustine.
He's not oppositional defiant. This is how he treats his mom and dad.
But at school, sometimes he won't do the assignments. So I feel like we feel it sometimes maybe creeping in that way a little bit. I guess my husband and I just don't want it to affect our lives, so that we're feeling so burdened with this that it's affecting how we are enjoying life, so to speak.
I couldn't understand that. Who wants to live with a 17-year-old who totally runs things? That's not the way things are designed. Stay right there. I'll talk to you on the other side, my dear.
The Heart of the Interior Life with Elizabeth Jingle.
Within the sixth rule of St. Ignatius of Loyola's 14 rules for the discernment of spirits, St. Ignatius of Loyola highlights the need for prayer when we are experiencing spiritual desolation. St. Ignatius invites us to change ourselves intensely against the desolation itself, as by insisting more upon prayer. Prayer is the first step in resisting spiritual desolation. In the interior storm of spiritual desolation, this first step, when one is perhaps feeling separated from their Lord and Creator, will often need to be done with intention. This very important and decisive step can become a turning point in rejecting spiritual desolation. Father Jules Toner wrote, "The first and most essential step in changing ourselves with the hope of conquering desolation is prayer. In this context, prayer of petition. What might be your prayer of petition during spiritual desolation?"
For more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net.
Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo.
I often have people ask me, aren't you scared when you talk about the issues such as abortion or all the different ideologies, especially the gender ideology? I'm scared of what I don't say if I'm not using this platform that God gave me wisely and well. If I'm not sharing information with people, if I'm not sharing the truth of the Catholic faith, I'm going to be held accountable, as is any one of us who has a platform. And we all have a platform. The sizes and the extent are different, but every single person, especially if you have a computer and if you have a Facebook page or a Twitter account, you have a platform. And so we're all responsible to evangelize. And we may be fearful, but we move through that fear with trust that God is with us. He tells us He will give us the words.
Catholic Connections, Teresa Tomeo. Weekdays, 9 a.m. Eastern. On EWTN Radio.
Got so many good calls, and I'm feeling very frustrated and guilt-ridden because I want to get to everybody. I'm talking to a mom. 17-year-old son is really defiant, major defiant, such so that they've had to call the cops. All right? Now, Dad says he's 18, he's out of here, but I was reading Mom's silence that she doesn't necessarily agree with that, but I'm not going to chase it there. Mom, you still there?
Yes.
You're saying, how do we have peace in our marriage and in our home when this kid does this? And I suspect there's two things. One, you and your husband got to be on the same page. Can't have you saying, well, that's how he talks to his friends, so we can't take his cell phone, and your husband saying, no, that's the one thing that matters to him, and if he's not going to cooperate, we're taking the cell phone. Okay, so you got to decide. I'm smelling there's some disagreement there. Secondly, you have to set up the conditions in your home for what you're going to do. And because of his, you've said, rages, you might want to warn him, if you ever, ever get out of control with one of your rages, we call the cops.
And he knows that. We have told him that.
And
so he does know that.
And has he stopped since then?
Yes.
Okay.
And also there's, a little truancy issue because of the idea of, oh, I don't want to get up and go to school. So we after going through this for a year, we have in place this year what will happen.
Okay.
So we feel confident in that.
Okay.
But it's just the idea of...
Well, for example, I think it's a small example, and I think you're afraid of your son. But if you said to your son...
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I know, you laugh, and yeah, I know you are. You said, if you ever take that car, If you ever take that car without our permission, it will be the last time you take it. But see, you're afraid to say that. And I'm not telling you to say that because I don't know your situation. But if you were to say that, you know all hell would break loose. And that scares
you. When he went out driving that night, you know, I did say, I texted him and I said, you need to get home now. I'm calling the police.
He stole your car, Mom. He stole your car.
Yes.
Okay. What do you do when somebody steals your car?
Well, he was home in 10 minutes after getting that text.
And then you tell him
about it.
Well, then you tell him what happens next time, right?
Yes.
If you take the car, I call the police immediately. Now, I'm not telling you to do that, but you can do that.
Yes.
But you see, there's something holding you back. And if we were in therapy, I would chase it and I would explore it. But you have a decision to make. I got to let you go. You have a decision to make. You and your husband, are we going to live this way for the next 7 months or whenever it is that he turns 18? Or are we simply going to say, the last time that we have left, we're going to set the tone here? Because at age 18, he's still going to be a junior. Then what? Or are we going to find somebody else to take him in? Because he can't live here. So he can go live with a relative. He can go live with somebody from church. But he can't stay here. These are all decisions you have to make at this point. You said a critical thing at the very beginning of your call. You said, yeah, we had a history of oppositional defiance, but don't we all have a bit of an oppositional defiance in us? Not so. Oppositional defiance is just this ongoing resistance to rules.
Mm-hmm.
And it is something that's probably been building. Now, he's either your only son or your youngest son. And
only youngest son, older daughter.
Okay, yeah. And she didn't do any of this stuff. So he probably pushed on you a lot harder than she did. And your experience with her wasn't anywhere near like this. In most, likely. I could be off, but likely. And so he pushed. And your kind of confusion regarding how to handle him started a long time ago. And as he smelled that I can assert myself and do what I want more and more as he got older, he saw my parents are parenting scared. And that's essentially invitation for him pushing. I got to let you go, Mom. I have a book called Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens. Deals with an awful lot of these kind of discipline issues. It's on my website. If you're interested in it, it hits hard on putting parents back in charge, but you got to want to do that. Thank you. Thank you for your call. Naira, I'm not sure I'm pronouncing this right. Naira from Fresno?
Maria?
Eric. M-N. I know they're close together on the typewriter there. Hi, Maria. Sorry about that.
No problem.
All right. Your father-in-law is 85, huh?
Yes.
And you say his health is declining.
Yes.
Now, how, when he says he's behaving strange, what do you mean?
Well, not to anybody, only to my other sister-in-law. He's wanting to touch her. He's wanting to kiss her neck. And pretend like nothing is wrong, like it's normal. But he hides from everybody else.
Are you noticing anything else that would indicate that he is slipping on the front end of dementia?
No, because my mother-in-law, his wife, I mean, he's there in the dementia. And, you know, it's totally different. He's nothing different. It's only that situation that's come up lately.
So that's what's confusing you, that he's just doing this very targeted toward a daughter-in-law.
Yes.
All right. I cannot diagnose your father-in-law, of course, from here. However, I will tell you generally, one of the early signs of an oncoming dementia, and it's not unusual at age 85 to not have some cognitive slippage, is a loss of a social governor. In other words, when he was 75, he may have thought that his daughter-in-law was really an attractive woman. But he knew not to do any of this stuff. You just don't do that. Well, perhaps as he's getting older and some neurological deterioration is happening, then he's kind of, there's nothing to stop him. I've had this situation before. I had a client come to me. She said the exact same thing, that her father-in-law or some elderly relative all of a sudden starts wanting to kiss her, wanting to hug her, wanting to touch her and hold her. And never, ever, ever before has he ever done anything like this. And that's a pretty significant sign that something neurologically is going on. So that said, first of all, you tell the people, let's not look at him like he's some kind of weirdo that all of a sudden he's now behaving something that he's always wanted to do, but now he's just figuring, I'm 85 and I could do it. No, it's probably not that. Probably not that. Explain to them that there's a pretty good chance that because his health is declining and probably there is a concomitant, that means associated, cognitive decline. And why only her? Because she's the one that he's always thought was cute, or she's the one that for some reason he's always been, she's really a sweet lady, really attractive, whatever, that's her. So given that, I would explain to your relatives, you said he used to be a very prudent and good man. Wonderful, and that exactly adds more evidence to the fact that something neurologically is going on, because here's a guy that has lived a good life, he's been appropriate, and now he's getting inappropriate. And that is oftentimes a very early sign of oncoming dementia. So explain to your mother-in-law or your mother, whomever it is, explain to her, please, understand this is very possibly, I say very likely, that he is experiencing some early dementia, and that what you got to do is make the wife, the son-in-law be aware of it, the daughter-in-law be aware of it, the wife be aware of it, so that they can take proper protective precautions. But know that, let's not blame him too much. That's the way I would look at it.
In regards to the faith, he was receiving communion before this. And we kind of told the extraordinary minister not to come. So what do we do there?
I would talk to the priest, because I think, you know, just from what I'm hearing you say, and maybe the priest will ask some more questions, if in fact there is a part component of his neurological compromising going on, then he is not fully accountable for what he's doing. And for it to be a serious sin to keep you away from communion, you have to have full consent of the will. And it's very possible, I think probable, he doesn't, especially if all his life he's never done anything like this. When my grandmother first started into dementia, she started telling dirty jokes. My grandmother never told dirty jokes. Are you kidding me? But no, she started telling dirty jokes and laughing like crazy. That was the very beginning, along with some other personality changes that happened. Okay, Maria, so you explain that to him, my dear.
Thank you.
Oh, gosh, I'm running out of time, and I want to get to you, dear folks. It's Dr. Ray.
This program brought to you in part by the town of Ave Maria, Florida.
Ave Maria, a big kind of small town. A golf cart-friendly, ride-your-bike-everywhere kind of town with something for everyone. Resort-style amenities, two golf courses, shopping, and dining in our town center. With Ave Maria University and Ave Maria Catholic Church at the core of the community and a wide range of homes to meet your family's needs. Visitors are welcome. More information can be found at avemaria.com. Ave Maria, a big kind of small town.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Here's the new challenge. At least 1 hour a week in front of the Blessed Sacrament, with the goal of an hour a day in front of the Blessed Sacrament. I had a guy come up to me and he says, Father, you know, I'm doing a lot of things. I'm in a men's fellowship. I pray with my wife every day. I go to Mass every Sunday and usually a couple times during the week. I read Scripture. He goes, I want more. I said, do you pray in front of the Blessed Sacrament? He said, outside of Mass, no. I said, I think that's the more. See, all these saints, these are the ones who surround us. These are the ones who ran before us. These are the ones who fought well, who kept the faith, they would tell you, as would every single saint in heaven right now, you cannot run this race if you don't spend time with the Master. Whatever else we're doing, it's second, third, and fourth. First things need to be first. And the first thing is to be with the Master. And the Master is Jesus.
Do you have a teenager at home who's full of potential? Too often the world is telling you to be content with mediocrity instead of raising respectful and responsible young adults with strong character. Hi, everybody. I'm Dr. Ray. If you need some help, not only to navigate those teen years, but to really enjoy them, check out my book, Standing Strong, Good Discipline Makes Great Teens, as well as my other books on the store page at AveMariaRadio.net. Amy, I do want to hear your comment, but I'm going to go to Brenda here because it's a situation that I want to comment on. Please, Amy, if I don't get to you in this segment, come back. Brenda, listen on the EWTN app. She sees people putting up Halloween decorations already. Oh, ain't that the truth? She saw a mom recently taking pictures with her young kid in front of a very horrible kind of thing. So Brenda asked, you really want your child to get into stuff like that? Which was taking a risk, questioning any parent's behavior nowadays. And the mom said something really significant. No, I really don't. But he likes it. Hi, Brenda. Brenda, I don't have to take a picture here. Are you there? Did Brenda go, guys? Okay, well, if Brenda doesn't come on the phone quickly, I'm going to answer my own question. This is sad. This is sad when a parent says, if it were up to me, I wouldn't want him to do it. Brenda, you there?
Okay, yeah, I'm here. Something happened. Something happens to my phone. No, I just, I was shopping and I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
It was a kid standing there with a knife. With blood dripping, and there was a toddler, and the mother was just standing there taking the picture and saying, but he likes it.
Yeah, let's put it on Facebook.
I just couldn't believe it.
Oh, come on, Brenda, I can believe it.
I could believe it, but I was just in shock. So I just thought I'd relay that on to you and your audience.
Oh, Brenda, I'm going to tell you, this is a sad thing, and it really expresses a much broader parenting mindset, which is... Yeah, but you know, that's what they do now. That's the way it is now. That's what kids like. That's what they do. Yeah, the problem there is not the kid. The problem there is the parent. And that parent
right.
doesn't have enough strength or will or courage or judgment to say, that's hideous. I don't want my children even experiencing anything remotely close to that. But no, that's what he wants. And I'm telling you, there's a real good chance when that kid is 17 that she's going to say, what happened? Brenda, thank you, dear. You know, it doesn't shock me at all. Amy, yesterday I talked about not blaming yourself when your kids leave the church, and I used an example of our Lord. So Amy says, I got a comment. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Dr. A. I know we don't have a lot of time. I'm just want to say, I'm so glad you're still on the radio. Like, it just makes me so happy. So I try to catch you every time.
Are you talking because of my age or because EWTN is going to fire me?
No, I'm just, you help a lot of people. You help me as a young mom. And I think as young Catholic parents, we really get, it's easy if we're not careful to get caught in this. I'm going to keep my kids Catholic. They're never going to stray from the faith. And it's very difficult, and I mean, you and I have some experience now, and the reality is we can't keep our kids Catholic. In fact, you can have somebody raised in a good Catholic home, and they stray, but then you can have somebody raised with no faith at all, and they become, you know, devout Catholic.
Father Larry Richards.
So, and I mean, I wasn't raised with any faith.
Neither was he.
You know.
Neither was he.
Yeah, so, you know, so you know, what do we do? And I remember God showed me. He's like, I'm the perfect parent. I mean, we didn't have a conversation, but you know what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. He laid it on my heart and he showed me, I'm the perfect parent. I know what's good for everybody, but yet my kids don't listen. So why do you think, you, an imperfect parent, that your children are going to listen to you? And it helped me to put my head down easier. Does that mean we don't talk to our children about the faith and pray with them and whatever it is? No, of course, we still. And I'll tell you, so I have four children.
Amy, I'm going to have to cut you off, dear, because the music's going to start us. You feel free to call back. I want to hear more of what you say, please. This is Dr. A. I appreciate your company. Thank you for joining me here. Walk with God, the perfect parent. And do you disobey him too?
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit DRA.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.